Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
As you know, we have a guest speaker this morning, and I will get to that in a few moments, but we do have some other announcements. First, there is some interest in starting a bhajan group. And if any of you wish to participate in that congregational singing, that group singing, you should talk to Aditya after today's talk. So, bhajan group forming, please join if you're interested. Secondly, next Sunday, we will have, and this is now for important to remember, on the third Sunday of every month for the foreseeable future, the third Sunday of every month, we will have a speaker from the congregation. Next Sunday, the 15th, that will be Ryan Newcollins, who will speak to us. She's our secretary of our board of trustees, longtime member of the congregation now. And she will speak to us about her interest in Vedic astrology, focusing on the charts of Sri Ramakrishna, the Dalai Lama, and a third figure whose name I don't recall. Now, on the third Sunday of October, the speaker will be Uma Majmudar, who's sitting right here in the front row, and she'll speak to us on a comparison of Jainism and Vedanta. That's the third Sunday in October. So going on then for this month, on the 22nd of this month, we are honored to have, as he comes each year, Swami Bodhananda Saraswati, the head of the Sambodh Foundation, very dear to Swarna Shah and others of the congregation. And he will speak to us on the 22nd of September on feeling the divine presence. The 29th of this month, I'll be back. No need to say anything more about that. Are there any other announcements I should have made that I didn't think to make? Okay. Oh, yes, Sarvadevananda. I about forgot that Swami Sarvadevananda is coming. He's not coming on a weekend, which that's... tripped me up a little. He will be here on Tuesday the 24th through Thursday the 26th. He'll speak in the chapel at 7 a.m. on the 24th.
7 p.m.
Did I say 7 a.m.? 7 p.m. In the chapel after Arati. After that, we'll have a potluck supper and reception for him. Then on Wednesday morning, the 25th, he will be offering initiation diksha. For any of you who are interested, please see me after today's talk. I have a sheet that he has provided to give to you. Then on Wednesday evening, the 25th, he will lead our class on Jnana Yoga. On the morning of the 26th, any of you who would like to join him for breakfast at 8:30, please come that morning. He'll be here, and he leaves pretty promptly at 10 a.m. that morning. So if you want to spend a little more time with him, that's the way to do it. Now, I think that's all the announcements. So then I will open with our regular opening chant. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahano Bhunaktu Sahaviyam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mahvidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. May the divine being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the divine being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. And just a word, as you all know, almost all of you know, that's a translation by Swami Yogeshananda, and Swami Yogeshananda continues to perk along, though he's in a wheelchair. He takes his meals with the monks, and we're very happy to tell you that his health is somewhat restored, remarkably. He's now saying, just for the novelty of it, I'm going to live to 100. He's now 96. So, we'll see. We love him very much, as you know. Now, it's my pleasure and privilege to introduce our guest speaker for today, Clarice L. Belcher. Clarice Belcher's experience with nonviolent communication began in 2001. In 2003, Marshall Rosenberg came to Atlanta to offer a five-day workshop, and he returned in 2005 to lead a 10-day international intensive. Clarice attended both those sessions. Since then, Clarice has practiced the principles of nonviolent communication and offers workshops and practice groups for others interested in the work. And as many of you already know, there will be a workshop this coming Saturday, the 14th, on a real three-hour workshop on this nonviolent communication with materials supplied and so on. There's no charge. As always, voluntary donations are gleefully accepted, but nothing is expected. But you must RSVP for that workshop so that Clarice will know what it is that who's going to be here, and enough materials will be provided. So without any further palaver, I will introduce Clarice. And as you can see by the position of the microphone, she prefers to stand and address you from approximately where I'm standing. Clarice, thank you so much for coming this morning. It is an honor and a privilege to have you here.
Well, thank you very much. Well, I want to thank you all for coming, and especially Jyoti, because I realize I'm here because of her efforts and also because of Shankara, so thank you very much. When Shankara took me into this beautiful chapel, I have to tell you the first thing that struck me was this gorgeous mural. I just love these colors, and I love the feel of this chapel. This is a beautiful place that you have created, and I can feel the energy of the love that inspired it. I also looked at that chair up there, and I thought, ooh, I think I'd be a little lonely sitting up there by myself. So I asked if I could stand here, and Shankara said that I could. This way, I think I'll feel more connected, which is what this work is about. I wanted to share briefly, I came to know about Marshall Rosenberg and his work that he entitled in a book called Nonviolent Communication through a church that was itself in so much conflict that it literally polarized the congregation in half. And it required more skill than what the ministers and staff had, so they brought in outside support. Well, I was curious to see what this outside support would have to say, so I went to his workshop, and it was there that he held up a copy of Marshall's book, and he said, "Read this and memorize it." Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I had ever heard of an endorsement of a book like that before. So I got really curious. I did get the book. I did read it. And I thought, I would love to meet this man. And as you know from what Shankara shared, Marshall came to Atlanta, and I had an opportunity to meet him twice. He passed February of 2015. I'm here to tell you, he was a lovely man. He was a master at empathy. He studied with Carl Rogers. Some of you may be familiar with that name. Carl Rogers is one of the preeminent psychologists of the 20th century. And Carl Rogers, one of his claims to fame is active listening. So Marshall took the basic ideas of active listening and kind of stretched it to include something else. And we will talk about that something else today. In my talk, I won't go through everything. I won't try to condense everything from the three-hour workshop next Saturday into about 20 minutes. That would probably give you a headache, and I don't want to do that, overload your minds with too much to think about. But I did want to touch a little bit on what I think of as the heart of his work, nonviolent communication. So with that in mind, I want to start the idea that we live in what we think of as an age of information. And that invites us to rely almost solely on our intellect. But the problem of relying on our intellect is that it doesn't tell us the whole story. It only tells us a partial story. In theater, people who are actors understand the words on a page are the script, but by no means is that the whole story. That there is also something called a subtext. And it is the subtext, the unexpressed feelings and needs of the characters that often drive what the characters will do or say, or what they will not do, or what they will not say. And it is this subtext that is often as important, if not more important, than the script itself. Many of us in this room are familiar with the script, with the intellect, but not necessarily familiar with the subtext or the feelings or needs. And that's what I want to talk to you about principally today, our feelings and needs. Because without them, we will never have the whole story. The wife, for example, who says to her husband, "You never listen to me," has a subtext beneath those words. The husband will hear just what is said, but he risks not hearing what is not said, because the subtext she has are her unexpressed feelings and needs around the statement, "You never listened to me." Marcia would say a statement like that is a tragic expression of feelings and needs. It is tragic because she risks not being heard in the way she wants to be heard, not being understood in the way she wants to be understood, and not having the connection that she wants to have. So similarly, the same is true of the husband who might say to the wife, "Well, I can never seem to please you." He too is speaking from a kind of a script, but beneath his words is a subtext as well, his own unexpressed feelings and needs. So what we're about today is to begin this journey of connecting to what our feelings are and to connecting to what our needs are. There are a lot of people who are very smart, who live unhappy lives because they don't know how to read people. You cannot read them fully if you are not aware of their feelings and needs. It is not enough to hear just what they say. It is extremely important to hear what they don't say. So with that said, I thought we might have a little bit of fun, because if you don't know what a feeling word looks like, if you don't know what a need word looks like, how can you speak to it? So I have these sheets here.
Thank you.
Would you be willing to take one and pass that around? So there's a list coming around. It's a partial list. When we meet next Saturday, I will give you a fuller, more complete list. And with that said, there may be no list that is entirely complete of feelings, but this will be enough to give us a start, to get a sense of what a feeling is, what it sounds like, and what it looks like. And when that parcel of papers hits the front row, would you be willing? Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. As these words go around, I suspect for those of you who have your copies already, you will see that feelings are grouped in two ways. This is how Marshall saw this. Feelings that we feel when our needs are met, and feelings that we feel when our needs are not met. So there are two kinds of groups of feelings, two ways of thinking about them. And at the top of the page, you will see feelings when your needs are met or when they are satisfied. And then just beneath that, you'll see a series of feelings when your needs are not satisfied. And as these papers continue to go around, I want to state feelings aren't something that kind of appear up here out of nowhere, like I was calm a moment ago and now I'm ready to rip someone's head off because I'm furious and outraged. Feelings are very much connected to what Marshall calls needs. And when my need is met, I will tend to be happy, peaceful, calm, and those are beautiful feelings because it helps me know my needs are being met in the moment. Similarly, if I'm feeling apprehensive or anxious or outraged, those are beautiful feelings too, because they help me identify that my needs have not been met. So I want to stop anyone from looking at the first list and thinking, oh, here are the good feelings, and looking at the next list and saying, here are the bad feelings. Feelings are neither good nor bad. They are simply pieces of information. That's all they are. Pieces of information. And that usefulness of that information is to let me know, is my need met in the moment or is it not met in the moment? So I don't have to guess at that. I don't have to be dependent on someone else to help me figure that out. I can know that like that. And anyone who's been on 285, as I have been, and been in outrage by a car that just missed this much, my need was not met in that moment. But here's the interesting thing. The outrage that I may feel in 285 in that moment may very well change 5 minutes later to complete calm when I pull into a parking lot. And my point being that we will experience many feelings throughout the day. Someone did a study, I don't know how they did this study, but we go through 40,000 feelings a day.
Whoa.
Imagine that, 40,000 feelings a day. I might wake up grumpy in the morning. I am not going to stay grumpy all day long. I may very well end up going to bed joyous. That's important information because we will have our feelings. Whether we acknowledge them or not, whether we are aware of them, we will have our feelings. If we are not aware of them, they will drive us. If we are aware of them, we can drive them. So why don't we take a look then at the feelings inventory? I'm going to guess under that section that says feelings when your needs are satisfied that you have probably felt every single one of these feelings. Is that an accurate guess?
Yes.
And I'm also going to guess that when you look at the column beneath, feelings when your needs are not satisfied, that you have felt every single one of these feelings as well.
Amen.
What you may not have done is to have named these feelings, either to yourself or to someone else. Sometimes we have this idea that if I'm feeling angry, push that away. I have a dear friend, it wasn't safe for her to feel sadness when she was growing up. Push that away. All children are supposed to be happy all the time. Well, children are people just like adults. They will have the same plethora of feelings that adults will have. The sadness that an adult knows can be a beautiful connection for the sadness that a child may have. And that's where connection comes, is in the shared feelings, the acknowledgement of those feelings. If I keep them hidden from you, you can't know in this moment how I'm feeling. And in this moment, I'm feeling very calm and content. If the chandelier, however, were to drop from the ceiling and hit me on the head, I can assure you I will feel something different. So feelings then are body reactions. And I'm curious, is there any feeling on this list that you are feeling in this moment?
Relax.
Yeah.
Intrigued.
Oh, I love that. How many times have you heard someone recently say, I feel intrigued?
Not very often.
When you say that, my experience of you changes. I am brought into your world, and I have a sense now of what interests you. If she had said instead, and of course this word isn't on the page, I feel good, my experience would be very different. Good is a word that's almost like this. It says stop right here. Do not come any closer to me. But when she says intrigued, when Jyoti says relaxed, that's gone. I'm invited into your world, and I have a connection.
What if I say weepy? If I say I'm feeling weepy, I just
weepy?
Want to weep.
I would feel that. I would hear that. I would guess, are you feeling sad?
Mixed. Many emotions.
Ooh. Would you be willing to name some of those mixed emotions? And you don't have to. I'm not going to put you on the spot in this moment. But I so appreciate your bringing that in. Because the shyness, I don't know if that's what you're feeling in the moment, perhaps horror, because you're on the spot, is what many people feel. They are scared sometimes to share what they're feeling. And that's because we have been trained and educated and enculturated not to speak that language.
I think inadequate would be more appropriate for that state. Inadequate.
Oh, inadequate. I want to thank you for bringing that in, too, because inadequate is not a feeling. It's a judgment. There is a whole list of words that Marshall has in his book that speaks to words that we pretend as if they're a feeling, but they aren't. Here's one. I feel taken advantage of. Have you ever heard yourself say that? Mm-hmm. Taken advantage of is not a feeling. But if I held the thought that I was being taken advantage of, how do you think I might feel about that?
Angry?
Yes. I might feel very angry about that. Hurt. And in that hurt, yes, very hurt. And the beauty of identifying anger and hurt is that in that moment, with the speed of light, that's what Marshall would say, I can know I have an unmet need. So why don't we then take a look at the needs, because this is the next piece, and this is at the bottom half. So needs, if you look at the definition of that in the dictionary, to me, it's so overwhelming. It gives me a headache just to look at all the words that are used to describe need. So the best definition I ever heard was from a colleague of Marshall's named Lucy Liu. And she said, needs are those qualities and a life I cherish. So I'll say that again. Needs are those qualities and a life I cherish. And when I look at these needs, connection, acceptance, appreciation, consideration, cooperation, belonging, respect, is there anything here I wouldn't want in my life? So if I were to feel angry or hurt because I'm holding the thought that I'm being taken advantage of, what would you guess my need might be? Because that feeling of anger and hurt is connected to a need. So if you look at this list, what would you guess the need might be?
Respect.
I might very well have a need for respect. And what my anger and hurt tells me is that in this moment, it's not being met. And I would suggest that that is a beautiful piece of work that I'm doing to connect to what's alive in me, to what I'm feeling in that moment, to name the feeling and to name the need, because then I can begin to do something constructive about it. Because then I can begin to speak to the other person about what I am observing that they have said, how I feel about that, what my needs are around that, and what my strategies are for meeting that. And we will talk about that more in full when we meet Saturday for the workshop. So the husband, or rather the wife, who says to the husband, "You never listen to me," what would you guess her feelings are? And you can please feel free to take a look at this sheet, because this is part of the process. This is part of our undoing what we have been trained to do. We have been trained to not bring feelings and needs into our lives, so now we're going to undo that by bringing them in. It's a little messy at first because we're not used to doing it, but we've got this sheet. This is the only cheat sheet you can actually use legitimately.
To be seen and understood.
Absolutely, yes. And what would you guess her feeling might be when she says to him, "You never listen to me"?
Frustration?
Yes, it could very well be frustration.
Disappointed.
Disappointed, yes. Yes, absolutely. You see, there could be a plethora of different feelings. A feeling in and of itself isn't right or wrong. What matters is, does it accurately reflect what is alive in me in the moment? Yes.
I think that is an indicative of empty space. Neither has an answer between the two.
And if we take a moment in that empty space to reflect, what am I feeling in this moment? And what are my needs in this moment? Then that's mining gold. Because I am now connecting to myself. If I don't connect to my own feelings and needs, how can I possibly connect to yours? If I don't have a vocabulary for feelings and needs, how can I possibly speak to yours? So this is the vocabulary. It's very much like learning a different language. German has its vocabulary of words. Spanish has its vocabulary of words. French has its vocabulary words. Feelings and needs has its vocabulary of words. And this process that we are doing now, by taking the time to slow things down and get curious, well, what would that wife be feeling? Well, what would her need be? That's the process. And we love ourselves, and by extension, love others, when we take the time to do that process. And at first, it will take a little while because we're not used to doing it. My partner, Mason, is here, and when we have our discussions at home, we usually have them literally at the kitchen table. And tacked onto the refrigerator with a magnet is a list of feelings and needs. And we pull that list down if we find ourselves befuddled, that we don't know exactly what to feel in the moment or what our needs are. We give ourselves the language. We give ourselves the words to say to one another so that we can tell our truths without wounding each other. Because this work isn't about not telling my truth. If I perceive, for example, that you're taking advantage of me, this work is about my letting you know that. But in a way that you can hear it without making you wrong. And many of us are accustomed to making people wrong. I'll either make myself wrong or I'm going to make you wrong. But someone here is going to be wrong. And this work is not about that. And in fact, you two might be able to help me with this, or anyone in here. There's that wonderful line that Rumi said, "There is a field beyond right or wrong, meet me there." This is that field. So the husband then, who says to the wife, "I can't ever seem to please you," what do you guess his feelings are? Yes. So if you take a look at that feeling list, what word that names a feeling that he's feeling?
Hopeless.
Yes, beautiful. Yes. And what would you guess his need is connected to his feeling of hopelessness?
Appreciation.
Yes, appreciation. So that's a different thing, isn't it? Rather than say to someone, I can't ever do anything right by you, to say instead, I feel hopeless because I have a need to be appreciated. How do you hear those words?
A lot different.
Does that draw you in? Yes. So you can see that this work is about showing up vulnerably. It's about showing up honestly, authentically, and with integrity. Trusting that I can say to you what is alive in me in the moment, and it won't turn you away from me. It will, in fact, bring you closer to me. And that's been my experience using this work. It surprises people to know I have a temper and I can get to boiling mad in less than a nanosecond. Mason is here, but sworn to say nothing about that. But trust me, he's seen that enough times. And this work has helped me slow that down. It doesn't mean I will never not feel anger again. It doesn't mean I will never not lose my temper again. I'm not sure that's really the point. The point is that when I do, I connect to it very quickly and have the skills for managing that. And when I do that, I'm very effective in my communication. And that's empowering, to know how to manage any given situation. Yes.
Transparent in the sense you know what feeling is showing something different and something outside. So if it's transparent, would it be different for communication? Would it be better?
Well, if I thought that there was a difference between what someone felt and what they were saying, I might say to them, I feel confused and have a need to know how you hear what I'm saying. That's a beautiful phrase. How do you hear what I'm saying? Yes. Or the other way to do that is, would you be willing to tell me how you feel about what I've said? Some people will be frightened to do that. And so what we can do is to help provide them a safe place. If I am, in fact, genuinely interested in what you're feeling in the moment, I mean sincerely interested, you will feel the energy of that. And that will help you open the door. That's part of this work. That when both individuals, the husband and the wife, genuinely understand one another, everything changes. You closed your prayer with the divine, the spiritual divine presence.
May the divine being look over us lovingly as a mother and a father. And then it closes with Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace be unto us and to our children.
And that's what we can have. That divine moment that we're looking for can, in fact, be had when two people show up vulnerably. It's not that hard to get to. It's not something way up here. I can get to it any moment that I am genuinely willing to be vulnerable, because in my vulnerability is my strength. And we have that backwards, which is unfortunate. But here's the good news. We can unbackward it. Not sure that's a word, but we can do it differently. We don't have to be stuck in a way that keeps us isolated and separate and lonely. It's not lost on me that in this country, 40% of the population is lonely. And I think in large part it's because they don't speak to their feelings and needs. If all we do all day long is speak to one another from our brains, we are missing the richness of life. So I thought we might do one more thing. Mason, would you be willing to hand some of these? This is applying feelings and needs. So I have a few statements here that I thought might be fun for us to play with, to help identify feelings and to help identify needs, to put us into that practice. So here are some statements you might have heard once in your life, may perhaps have said once in your life, maybe twice.
It's an incomplete list.
So I thought we might just have fun with this, right? So you never help around the house. That's a beautiful criticism statement, isn't it? Guaranteed to close the door, slam it shut. So how then can we take this statement and increase our chances for being heard in the way we want to be heard? So what would you guess is the feeling behind the statement, you never help around the house? And take a look at your feelings list. Yes?
Frustrated.
Frustrated, yes. Annoyed, yes. Overwhelmed, yes. Do you see how there can be a plethora of feelings around that?
I'm also neglected, being taken for granted.
So I appreciate your bringing that in, because taken for granted and neglected are not feelings. So if I hold the thought, I'm neglected, I feel neglected, I am actually not experiencing my feeling. If I hold the thought I'm being taken advantage of, I am not really experiencing the feeling. And here's something else that's interesting. We have all seen people who were angry and screaming and yelling. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So here's the fascinating thing about that. When someone comes into a room screaming and yelling, they have not yet connected to their feeling. We see it loud and clear. There's no question in our minds that they are angry, but they have not yet connected to that. The screaming and yelling is a distraction. Because when we connect to our anger, it's a quiet moment, not a loud one.
It could be strategy.
I'm sorry?
Strategy to avoid.
Strategy to...
So let me say a bit about the brain on that. The brain research is by no means complete, but what scientists have realized so far is that the reptilian part of the brain, which is right here, the back of our heads, the part that judges is this dangerous or safe, whether it is real or imagined, once we get into the reptilian brain, another word for that is reactivity, we are there for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It is, isn't it? You know that adage that our grandparents might have said years ago, go take a walk? Maybe that would have been about 20 minutes, right, by the time you left the house and came back. So there's wisdom in that. So if someone is in their reptilian part of the brains, the really important thing to realize is they cannot hear you. It's not that they refuse to hear you. It's that they physically cannot. And a word associated with that is that they have been hijacked by their feelings. So the moment they hear that they are angry, the moment they connect to their anger, then that feeling of anger will begin to subside. And that piece of work is called empathy, and we will talk about that Saturday. Yes?
And I was going to say, it sounds like a piece of this work is what some people call mindfulness or the sacred pause, to be able to stop between that response and that, or that stimulus and that response, and create a space.
Yes.
So that your reasoning center, your cortical, can override those types of.
Yes, if my own experience is, if I can catch what I'm saying with the first thought, then I increase my chances for not going to the reptilian brain. If I'm in my 500th thought, I'm there. I'm devoted to the 20 minutes. And that's assuming I don't add fuel to the fire. So if I'm already angry, you never help around the house. Well, you know what? You never help around the house. I can't remember the last time you helped around the house. You're just shiftless. You're no good. Why are you even in the house? I could be angry for 20 years. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm going to go way beyond that 20 minutes. So that's why it's really important to stay connected. This work isn't whether the brain or the heart is more important. It's not either or. It's both. We need both brain and heart. I need to hear what I'm saying to myself. Because if I'm saying to myself, I'm being taken advantage of, then that's going to introduce certain feelings. Yes?
Okay, so is resentment a feeling?
Yes.
And that might also be for the first thing that you
have. I'm sorry?
That might apply to that you never have run the house.
Yes. You? Yes, and so what would you guess her need is if she's feeling resentment?
I think her need would be help, because she's probably overwhelmed with all the work, so she needs help.
You are very adept at sharing your feelings. Did you catch what she said?
Yes.
She used the word overwhelmed. You are very adept at that. Now, I'm curious to know if you would be willing to take a look at the needs list and see if you can find a need word that would address the feeling that you brought in.
I can't speak, get ahead of at work.
Well, let's stay with you never help around the house. And as you said, she may well feel overwhelmed. So on the needs list, here on this page, what would you guess her need is connected to her feeling of overwhelm?
Cooperation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Beautiful. Thank you. That's the important thing, that feelings and needs are connected. And for the way I understand Marshall's work, needs is the pivotal piece. Needs is the pivotal piece. A feeling of overwhelm or frustration or anger doesn't just appear out of nowhere. It is connected to a need. Was there a question over here? Yes.
Kind of not a question, but I think how you put it, when it says, you know, never help me anywhere in the house, and the way you respond, saying that, okay, if I'm in your place, let me know what can I do that I can be helpful, or something like that. Because I know that you obviously, when you, or if I'm in your place, I would assign you tasks so that you become a, you know, that's what I would put it, saying that if I'm in your place, give me a list of the tasks so that I can do something in the house.
And I really appreciate your bringing that in, because what I hear you talking about now is strategy.
Yes.
And we're not talking about that quite yet. We will Saturday. Because what people often do is go to the strategy first without ever acknowledging the feeling or the need. I got plenty of strategies for you. Just do them now, and we'll be okay. So we're not taking into consideration my feelings and needs as well as the feelings and needs of another. And that's the work. I'm not the only one who has feelings and needs. Everyone here does. And I'll tell you something very interesting, and I will say this again and again, even on Saturday. Marshall believed that all behavior is in the service of needs. All behavior is in the service of needs. So someone hitting someone else, that is a behavior in the service of a need. Yes, that's very interesting, isn't it? Someone who is screaming and yelling at someone, that is behavior in the service of a need. So you can see how we can move out of this judgment of someone who is screaming and yelling, and rather than make him wrong or bad, get curious instead. So what need of his is not met? Because what we know is this: when all our needs are met, we are calm, content, and happy. So all needs, all behaviors, rather, are in the service of needs.
So that means that we need to cultivate empathy.
Yes.
Empathy.
Yes. And Marshall had a very interesting way of speaking to empathy.
But what if the need is not a valid...
Is not what?
Valid.
Oh, all needs are valid. All needs are valid. There is no word on this needs inventory that isn't valid. So where we get confused is in the strategy. So what a need does is tell us what the qualities are in a life we cherish. The strategy tells us how to get there. And that's the difference. Needs answer the question what, strategies answer the question how. And in Marshall's work, there are four pieces of this, and I'm sharing with you two, feelings and needs. But the first piece, this is a sneak preview of what you will hear Saturday, is observing without evaluation. That's the first thing. Second, share my feelings. Third, state my needs. And then fourth, state the strategy. Now, just because I've stated a strategy doesn't mean that that person is going to meet my need with the specific strategy I named. But the beauty of it, when two people literally come to the table and share what's alive in them, their feelings and needs, the strategies arise organically from the shared feelings and needs. Because there are far more strategies than there are needs. But we forget that. I get honed in on this one strategy, and as Mason would be quick to attest, but again, he has sworn to secrecy. It's like it has to be done now. Now, will Western civilization as we know it come to an end if something in the house doesn't get done now? In that moment, it seems so to me, and that's when we have a discussion. Because perhaps what I have, my need is to trust that it gets done. And then the question is, okay, so how do we organize that? What is the strategy for seeing when it gets done? You had a hand up, yes?
To me, the statement, you never help her own house, is implying that she's primary person to take up the house and he's just a secondary person helper. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. I mean, she's obviously holding a judgment against him.
But what I'm saying is, in a house, why are we presuming if she's the principal person to take care of the house? Could be he is cleaning around the house and all that, and she's him?
So it would depend on what is between the couple, what the agreement is between the couple. In many households today, both share the responsibility. And if that's the agreement, then that needs to be discussed if it isn't happening. Does that answer your question?
not quite.
Well, I want to answer your question.
Still, I think the norm, you know, with the woman is taking care of the house and man is the help.
So, would in that scenario a man have any part to do with the housework, do you think?
In my opinion, he should. It's almost, it should be 50-50 probably, more or less.
So if they have the agreement it's 50-50 and either one of them isn't doing the 50-50,
correct.
If they say nothing to one another, then there's going to be resentment.
Well, to me, the implication was the statement is made by the woman.
Yes. But it could also be made by the man.
Yes,
that's what he was asking.
Thank you. I appreciate your patience with me. Thank you. Thank you. That's a very astute observation. Yes.
The sentence also implies that inside the house, ignoring that one of the spouses would not about outside the house.
Well, you see, she's not very specific, is she?
Yeah, I'm not using she or he, whatever it is.
He or she is not very specific.
Right.
And that's the other piece we'll talk about Saturday. The observation without evaluation is using something specific. So if I had this idea that you're not helping around the house, what is it exactly that I'm seeing you not doing? Because to the extent that I name that specifically, then we're all the same page. Do we dare go to the next statement? Yes.
You know, this is a very good generic list of the feelings. But when you apply to a specific thing, it takes two to tango.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first group, one person can be extremely happy and satisfied with the feelings, but the person with whom he is interacting might be, you know, in the second one, I'm extremely angry and I'm extremely dissatisfied.
Yes.
That's what is called communication. So this is bereft of communication. It is a single person's isolated feelings, justified or not justified.
Feelings are not about being justified or not justified. It's about what's alive in me in the moment. So, Mason, would you be interested in doing a role play?
Sure.
All right, so I'm going to say to Mason, you never help around the house.
And I'm
going to
run to the door.
You never do. What is it here with you?
So you feel frustrated.
So he is now using what's called empathy. And he is beginning to guess what I'm feeling. So go ahead, say that one more time.
So do you feel frustrated?
No, I'm angry. I have a need for support. Now, the moment I said I'm feeling angry and I have a need for support, I felt a shift. I'm not entirely out of my anger, but I feel it beginning to lower. Would you be willing to tell me how you feel about what I've just said?
I hear you feel angry, and I hear you have a need for support, and I would like to help you.
And how do you feel about what I just said?
I feel calm.
And one word, I love you.
And I have two words, he's taken. But that's a little bit like what it is, you see? It's both of us coming to the table being vulnerable. He might have been angry back, right? And then we talk about that, because maybe he's been hearing me say, you never help around the house 5,000 times, and now this 5,000 first time, that's it for him. Mm-hmm. And now he's angry. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
Several years ago, I must have read some offshoot of your mentor's work, because this issue of feelings having to be justified seems to resonate. And the thing I read is that feelings are not negotiable. You feel what you feel.
Yeah.
And trying to take someone else's feelings away or tell them they're wrong is, you know, the surest way to create and add fuel to the fire.
Yep. World War III, probably, in the house. Yes. And that's a very astute observation. And the sadness of what you're bringing in is that we are that disconnected from our feelings.
But another important thing which can bring this is the transfer of feelings. I'm angry at somebody else, but I'm throwing my anger at the other person.
Yes, and that's a projection. It can be a projection. And there's a beautiful piece of work we'll talk Saturday about self-empathy. Marshall did this not in his book Nonviolent Communication, but in another book he wrote called Speak Peace in a World of Conflict. And that is a beautiful piece of work. Because sometimes if I sit and I offer myself empathy, I may realize I'm not even really angry at Mason. I may, in fact, be tired and have a need for rest, and I haven't yet discerned what that strategy is, because I just keep doing, and never stopping to connect with what's alive in me. So even though it appeared to be about him, it was never really about him. You see, this is how the subterranean things can be if we don't take the time to connect to what's alive in us in this moment, to name our feelings and to name our needs. Yes. Yes. Anger, interestingly enough, is often the first feeling that appears, but it is by no means the only feeling. There could be a number of feelings. And we'll talk more about that too. But yes, that's a very astute observation.
If two partners are not participating in this workshop, is there a strategy of one person doing this, and how would you communicate with the other person, the needs? And
yes. So one of the things that Marshall suggested was that not everyone has to know this vocabulary. You can help know it for them. So you can begin to guess at what another person might feel, at what another person might need. And Marshall was very careful about this. He uses the word guess. He says we can never really know what someone else feels or needs, but we can guess. And you can ask them, so are you frustrated? Some people take issue at the word need. We'll talk more about that too. I think need, unhappily, has an unfortunate connotation to it, like it's a bad thing to have needs. That's because we confuse it with the word needy. But to have needs is actually coming from a position of strength. Because if I can figure out what my need is, and it's not that hard if I have this list available to me, then I can easily determine what the strategy is. The hard work is connecting to what my feelings and needs are, and I use the word hard lightly because we're not used to doing this.
Sometimes with the two partners, one person has always asked for his need to be satisfied. Other person compromised to do that. And the second person need would never be addressed, so we happen that.
Well, then you would have that conversation, you know, sharing how you feel, whoever the person is whose needs aren't being met. And it might be scary to do that, but someone might say, I feel very sad.
I think when it's always good to bring in a counselor in a space, you know, where you can truly communicate without being threatened.
I will, and if that's so, but I will say this, that sharing your feelings and needs from a genuine, sincere place, not without shame, not without blame, can be a healing experience. We have experienced that ourselves. Yes?
Thanks for this matrix. This really looks very good. I have a question. Maybe you might have already had this. When it comes to the feelings, do you have the fear on the good component in the matrix?
Yes. This is just a partial list. When we meet next Saturday, I'll hand out the whole list. I didn't want to overwhelm. I wasn't sure how this audience would take to this. And I thought, well, you know what? If you fold this in half, here's your homework assignment between now and Saturday. You could use this. You know, take it out each day. In fact, that's a great way to develop a vocabulary for feelings and needs. Like when you wake up, how do I feel in this moment? Which means put this right by your nightstand. Or if that's too much work, you need to have a cup of coffee first. Then you go in the kitchen and have your coffee. Well, then have this right on the counter or tacked up on the refrigerator so that you can begin to at least give yourselves the opportunity to do this at least once a day. Some people have timers on their watches, and they set it to go off at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and that's when they'll ask themselves, what am I feeling in this moment? And it's important to acknowledge what I'm feeling in this moment, not what I think I'm going to feel 2 hours from now or what I believed 2 days ago. That's the practice. What am I feeling in this moment? And remember, if you decide you're feeling lonely or anxious or frustrated, that's great news because it is telling you that you have unmet needs. And then you go right to this list. And there are more needs, too. And I will hand those out as well. I'm a little concerned. Do we have more time to go through the rest of these? Or would you be willing?
The congregation is the determiner of that. And they're used to staying past noon. So if people know that if they need to get up and go because they have some other commitment, they just get up and go. So let's just rock on.
Shall we rock on then? Okay.
Could you name the book that Marshall wrote about?
Yes.
Encounter you, at least we could have a little bit prepared.
Yes, so the first title is Nonviolent Communication.
Are you going to have those books available for sale? Are you going to have those books available for sale?
I don't remember what we decided about. Don't trust this. I will see to it that we get some for sale.
Okay.
The announcement to be made is that you can get your own online between now and then if you like, but if you don't want to be bothered with that, there will be copies for sale here next Saturday.
So the book that Shankara will be offering to you for sale is Nonviolent Communication. There is also a second book that Marshall wrote called Speak Peace in a World of Conflict. The book entitled Nonviolent Communication was his first, and I think of that as his primer. But much of the material in the second book, Speak Peace in the World of Conflict, is also in the first. And he also wrote a number of booklets as well. Yes, you had...
What's Marshall's last name?
Rosenberg, R-O-S as in Sam, E-N as in Nancy, B-E-R-G.
Okay.
Marshall Rosenberg, yes. Mm-hmm. And you can Google him. You can check him out on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Marshall Rosenberg, yes.
And you can look on our website because all this information is on the website. All this information about her talk today and about the workshop on Saturday is there.
Yes.
In this feelings inventory, this list is random or the first feeling is in your
view,
number one?
Yes, no, it's just random. There's a larger list that I will send Saturday, but I just picked and pulled a few. Yes. So do you have energy to go to the next statement and guess feelings and needs? All right. So here's one. You were always late. Yes. Yes, it could be a feeling of disappointment. What would you guess the need is? Yes, it could be a feeling of irritation as well. Yes. So if we know that there's a feeling of disappointment or irritation with the speed of light connected to a need, so what would you guess on your needs list is the need not being met?
To matter.
To matter. It could very well be that. And you see, if you say that to someone, I feel disappointed because I have a need to matter. That's a different experience from you're always late. Yes. the need to be known. Absolutely, yes.
I think there's a need to have order.
Yes. Yes. Shall we go to the third statement then? You're always picking on me.
I appreciate it.
Well, what would the feeling be? Because that would...
Uncomfortable
might very well be a feeling. You're always picking on me. Frustrated, might be. Discouraged, yes.
Upset,
yes, yes. You're beginning already to expand your feelings vocabulary. This is beautiful work that you're doing. And what would you guess the need is connected to the feeling of discouragement or uncomfortable or upset?
Acceptance.
Acceptance, yes. Mm-hmm.
Belonging.
Belonging, yes. See, there are no right or wrong answers here. It's just connecting feelings to needs. How about this sentence? I can't seem to get ahead at work.
Discouraged.
Yes, yes, discouraged.
Frustrated,
yes. And what would you guess the need is connected to the feelings of discouragement or frustration?
Appreciation.
Actually, multiple feelings in one feeling.
Are there more feelings?
Your feeling is just a singularly.
So would you be willing to name a specific feeling if you take a look at your feelings list?
Support?
Yes, might very well have a need for support.
Respect?
Respect, absolutely, yes.
I think unappreciated would be very predominant.
So unappreciated. How would you feel if you held...
Innocent, not
so,
respected.
So all of those are beautiful examples of judgments. So, isn't that interesting what you can discover in something like this? So if you held the idea, I'm not appreciated, how would you feel about that?
Discouraged.
How would you feel about that? Do you want to take a look at the feelings list and see if there's any feeling there that speaks to you when you hold the idea, I'm not appreciated?
So you don't care.
Well, let's see what she says.
Disappointed and lonely?
Yes. That's beautiful work you've done. That's beautiful work. Thank you. What then would be your needs connected to your feeling of loneliness? And that's when you look at the bottom half of the page. Let's see what she says. Hang on one moment. And then we'll come right to you.
I would say belonging and respect.
Beautiful. And that's the work in a nutshell. You have done beautiful, exquisite work. Thank you. And yes.
I was going to say something.
And you've done beautiful, exquisite work too. Both of you have done beautiful, exquisite work. Thank you. And then the last one. I don't have any friends.
Left out.
So lonely, yes. Lonely would be the feeling. Any other feelings connected to I don't have any friends?
Hopeless.
Hopeless, yes. Connection would be the need, absolutely, yes. Yes. So do you have a sense of how this is organized and how it works? So the piece that Marshall brought in that Carl Rogers did was needs. Carl Rogers did monumental work on feelings. But it's been my own experience, it's not enough to be able to name the feeling. It doesn't feel completely satisfying. But to connect that feeling to a need, that then is the whole picture. It's the whole story. And that's what we're going for, the whole story. Nathan, do you want to share your experience of having used this work?
Yes.
Yes.
Let's see. First of all, I just wanted to say how grateful I am to be here. I love meditation, but I usually have a little bit of difficulties quieting my mind down. But in the peace of this chapel, it was very easy. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm curious, do we have anybody here that works with numbers? Accounting, bookkeeping, anything like that? Or how about information technology, programming, testing? Okay, okay. Anybody does testing? Ah, I see. Got to have our testers, especially if I'm doing the coding. So I wanted to just mention a little bit about my background. I spent 7 years as property accountant for Macy's South, and then I got into an operations area, but the last 20 years I've been in IT. And I love that kind of work. I love working with numbers. I even love working with computers. They're more frustrating, but they do make sense. What never made sense to me is my relationships with other people. And the only thing more frustrating and confounding than the relationships with people at work were relationships with women. And I have to give credit where credit is due. Nonviolent communication saved me a whole lot of pain. It has brought a lot of joy into my life. It has brought deeper connections with Clarice, with the people at work, and brought me a lot of more peace and just feeling closer to God. And as a young man, I found out pretty early on that expressing my feelings on the playground, unless it happened to be anger, was a good way to get beat up. Our society does not do this well. It does not enable people to express their emotions very well, in my opinion. But I have found a lot of joy. And I was intrigued by your description of the weepy place. And I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but what that touches on me, there's a place where there's no difference between joy and sorrow. And it takes me to a state where I feel very connected to everything. And I'm very grateful for that. And NVC has been a great facilitator in that. So just wanted to thank you again for having us in your space. It's been quite a joy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mason. There's very little that Mason and I don't say to one another. We share a great deal with each other. Our intimate thoughts and fears and sorrows and pains and joys and happiness. And that has given us a full, rich life. You know, there's the 1% that has all the money in the world. Well, we're sort of like the 1% that's dealing with feelings. And there's great beauty in that and great richness in that. And we will talk more about that Saturday. Yes?
I have a very quick question. So in this inventory, as you said, it's going to be on the list. How the time and the environment, because all these things are subjected to time and environment, right? How is that related? Will that be some other topic for another day, or you can just briefly explain?
Well, the way I'm hearing your question, but it may not be the way you intended it, if you're at work, there are people who make a copy of these feelings and needs lists and keep them in their desk drawer. So if you're on a coffee break, you could take the time then, how am I feeling? If you're, is that how
well,
you
I
met that?
More of like your feelings and your needs changes
yes.
based on time and environment.
Yes.
So I'm trying to see how the time factor and the environment is going to be part of this inventory.
Well, let's see, if I were at work and I wanted a promotion and I'm hoping to get it and I'm told I didn't, there would be feelings around that and needs to. Do you see? Does that help?
Yeah.
So any environment and any time is perfect for feelings and needs. There's no special time because we're feeling all the time. Thank you. Yes, and they will come to you. Yes.
Subjects of, so when you talk about this, expressing feelings and verbalizing sounds to me, so what about the room for misinterpretations in the building blocks? Like people block their, you know, they don't want to listen, they don't want to even take into consideration what it is about expression.
So it might be interesting to become curious, because that would suggest they have an unmet need. You know, all behavior is in the service of needs. So if someone is saying no to listening, then they are also saying yes to something else. And that's important to understand that. What is it that they're saying yes to? And it may be, in that moment, they have a need for rest. They may be feeling tired. They don't have the energy to hear. That's just a guess. But having the conversation, guessing at what they might be feeling or what they're needing, helps to bring clarity to why you're not listening to me. And you had a hand, yes.
In Marshall's book, or in your experience, has there been any gender differences between the way men feels expresses or not expresses? So is there any gender difference?
I will say this, I do think that it's more difficult for men to access their feelings because they have been more deeply enculturated not to feel them. Marshall has that in his book. When he was growing up, someone bullied him when he was a child on the playground and he was in tears, and his teacher said, "Big boys don't cry." So you learn that at an early age. Yes, yes. Yes.
To me, it is very interesting that the rest of the year we are teaching each other how to rise above these emotions. Because we think these emotions are essential, but only for that particular moment of time. If you know how to philosophically, spiritually transform them, to rise above them, to control them without any resentment, that's the kind of teaching Mother Shankar is emphasizing.
Yes. And by the very act or virtue of naming them, you are already beginning to transcend them.
Transcend.
You won't be stuck in them, but you will begin.
Let me remind the congregation of the refrain of being your own best friend, which she alluded to, and I'm sure we'll go into more on Saturday. You must acknowledge to yourself your feelings and have empathy for yourself and forgive yourself, love yourself, acknowledge your feelings and needs, be your own best friend. You've heard it a number of times. And this is exactly what's being talked about. Just exactly what she was talking about when you're being your own best friend. Because you can't be a good friend to others unless you're a good friend to yourself.
Do you see any great area transcending feeling versus suppressing?
Would you be willing to ask that one more time? I didn't quite catch all the words.
Is there a difference between suppressing your feeling versus transcending?
Yes, the way I see it, suppressing is just holding it back here. But it's going to come out sideways in a sabotage way. Right, right. Yes. So anyone who suppresses feelings, at some point, they're going to boil over. You just don't know when that point will be, but you can pretty much guarantee it's going to happen. Yes?
Isn't transcending feelings first being able to recognize that you have them?
Yes. Yeah. I see it that way. I'm in your camp on that. Yes. Yes.
To some extent, using these techniques might help us to become the witness that we say in Vedantic principles. You become the witness of instead of getting entangled in the emotional yes. aspect of it, the more you practice this,
yes.
it might help you to make the transition of becoming a witness of it rather than...
Yes, yes. And empathy is very much like that. Empathy is holding a safe presence for someone to share what is alive in them in the moment, no matter what it is. And that is very much to what you're talking about. You're a witness. No judging. You're simply holding a safe presence. And the point of holding that safe presence, or in your terminology, being a witness, is to help them connect to what's alive in them in the moment. Because they may not yet do that. And not even know that they haven't done that. No, they'll get in their heads and they'll tell a story. We've all had that experience, right? It goes a little bit like this. You should see my sister. She's a mess. She is so on my nerves. She can't get anything right. She's been like this all her life. All her life she's been like this. Why my parents never did anything with her, I don't know. When is she going to grow up? I'm over. You see, I could do that for 40 minutes and not once connect to my feelings.
Or to hers.
Or to hers. So empathy...
What would be your feeling if you were expressing like that?
Frustration?
No.
I might be feeling frustrated. Mm-mm. I might be feeling worn out. Mm-mm. I might be feeling jealous. You see, I could be feeling any of those things. You see, there's no right or wrong feeling. It's just what I'm feeling in that moment. Do you see? But a lot of times people will get in their heads and they will tell their stories. Telling the story is coming from the intellect. It is not the same thing as coming from the heart. So in empathy, we will get right literally to the heart of things by asking them, so are you feeling frustrated? And they might go, yes. Or they might go, no. I'm feeling angry. Well, great. They've now connected to their feeling.
Can you use your discrimination, your power to balance your feelings? Say, feel sad, mad. But if you have cultivated what she calls witnessing or reasoning inside, screening your own emotions, whether it is justified, not justified in that sense, but what I am saying is it overreaction? Be your own judge in how you express it.
Well, the best way to do that is to be connected to them first.
Yeah.
And part of the discrimination is being able to name them. We had a question over here, and I think we have a question over here. The young lady over here.
So, if someone, it's like, you know the example about the little sister? If, to identify my feelings, I either feel distressed or disappointed.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And can you identify your need connected to your... That's beautiful. And then you could have that conversation with her. Help me understand. Yes, beautiful. And we had a
Raj.
Yeah. The topic itself, you said nonviolence way of communication. It seems to me that seems to be so much deep in the sense that you go inside of you, more self-exploration, self-understanding, self...
Yes, yes. Really, yes, that's a very astute observation, yes.
Because, I mean, in my community, we wish, saying, if I committed anything wrong with you by way of thoughts, actions, speech, or even physical way, I'm asking for pardon. You know, that's why we ask for the after the certain celebration. But it seems to me like it's going so much deep that you have to really understand yourself before you can really put it out and express and learn to express.
That's the apex of this work. That's a very astute observation. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments? Well, I feel delighted to be here and am very happy to meet you. And if you come next Saturday, I will be happy to see you then.
Please feel satisfied.
Well, thank you very much. My work here is done. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yes, Clarice, thank you so very much. This was very illuminating, as you can see by the reaction and the interchange with the congregation. So wonderful that you did this. I want to remind everyone about the workshop next Saturday. You do need to RSVP. It's just as easy as going on the website. It's right up at the top. You don't have to look for it. It's right there. Just hit the RSVP button. There's a little form to fill out, and you're done.
I will have folders, and there will be 14 pages in each folder. So I want to be sure that I have enough for everyone. So your RSVP is very helpful. It meets my need to know who's coming. Thank you.
So first, we have a closing prayer.
Okay, shall I sit then?
If you stand or sit as you please.
All right.
The prayer goes like this. Again, it's the translation of our wonderful founder, Swami Yogeshananda, an ancient prayer for peace. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in
the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, in the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail through my inner being.
Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. And now I invite you all to come inside. I think Clarice and Mason have time to stay with us a little bit. There are, of course, the wonderful snacks and tea and coffee and so on. So please come in. And again, thank you so very much for this. And I won't be able to be here next Saturday, but I'll bet you most of these people will.
Well, look forward to seeing you next Saturday. And thank you. And thank you very much.
More than welcome.
Thank you.